Application out of this seems so much to believe and not fear and keep our eyes on you. So we ask for the strength to do that, Lord. We ask for the grace and the mercy and life. Lord, help us love you more, even today, in the name of Jesus.
Okay. I know, okay, we have a lot.
What is this?
Someone took that and sent it to you. That's very sweet.
That was from Sunday.
Yeah.
That's, I remember that. Okay. Chapter 4. Words of Samuel came to all Israel. Now Israel went out to meet the Philistines in battle and camped beside Ebenezer while the Philistines camped in. I wrote through that aspect. To find those places.
Yep.
Okay. The Philistines drew up in battle, arrayed to meet Israel. When the battle spread, Israel was defeated. For the Philistines had killed about 4,000 people on the battlefield. Now, what has just happened in chapter 3 that this is moving from? Samuel's call. We think this is going to be powerful. We're going to go forward with Samuel as a prophet.
Judgment on Eli and his sons. Is that what this is working up to?
Pardon?
Judgment on Eli and his sons.
It is, but at this point we don't. We're just reading.
Oh.
We'll get there. And 4,000 people die. So remember, we want to enter into the life of what's going on there. And if you were part of the people, you're Israel. You're God's chosen people, and all of a sudden the Philistines are winning and 4,000 people are dying. What are you thinking?
What's up with this?
Where's God?
Oh, yeah. They aren't asking God.
Where's God?
What did they think? Oh, it must be that we don't have the ark.
Yeah.
So what didn't they do?
They didn't pray.
They didn't say God. They didn't ask. They just were looking for the rubbing genie. Yes.
Let us take to ourselves from Shiloh the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord.
That it may come along with us and deliver us. So who is supposed to be delivering them according to verse 3?
The Ark
is to deliver them from the power of their enemy. He's the magic talisman. Yes, it is. So the people sent to Shiloh, and from there they carry the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. Now who's supposed to be carrying this?
The priest on the shoulders. So how come they didn't? Do you think it was Hophni and Phinehas that was carrying it so that they didn't die? If it was just the regular people, why didn't they die?
Well, it says that in verse 4 that they didn't go. Yeah. They were there with it.
They were there.
But doesn't say who carried it? Well,
we don't know the Levites didn't carry it.
Right. Well, and they were priests.
They were Levites.
Right.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
As the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came into camp, all Israel shouted with a great shout. Why did they shout with a great shout? Because the Ark is going to win the battle for them.
They're going to win now.
So that the earth resounded. When the Philistines heard the noise of the shout, they said, what does the noise of the great shout in the camp of the Hebrews mean? And they understood the Ark of the Lord had come to camp. So the Philistines, what did they think?
They were afraid. They were. Why were they afraid? Because they remembered all the stuff. God is in the Egypt. They also assumed God had come to the camp. Yeah. <laughs> Yeah. They said God has come to the camp. Right. It's like all of them seem, I mean, the Israelites also, they're still picturing God as my God's bigger than your God. These just gods that you can carry around, whether they're wooden or in an ark or whatever. They're not really still in touch with the God.
So why would God win the battle for them? They're his people.
They were singing against him. Still teaching them how to worship him.
That's what it's kind of all about, isn't it? And even to the point that the Lord's going to let the ark get taken. It's not about the yard.
I have a question.
Sure.
The phrase God has come into the camp, are they talking about God or are they talking about the ark?
Well, to them, God is in the ark. What is the ark, by the way? Some of you have gone through the Old Testament up to this point. What is the ark? What is the ark?
It represents the presence of the Lord.
It represents the presence of the Lord. And usually, where is the ark supposed to be kept?
In the Holy of the Holiest.
Why?
Holiest of the Holy.
Because it's holy in God's presence.
Because that's where God said he would meet them.
Who does he meet?
The high priest.
Only the high priest, and yeah. Only once a
once
year.
Once a year, yeah.
So the rest of it, I mean, they get parts of it, and they sort of make their, and don't we do the same kind of thing? I mean, in Christianity, if she asked the question in the beginning, I kind of like that. She said, when you're in times of trouble, what do you go grab? Do you grab your Bible? Do you grab a cross? Do you grab, you know, I mean, what are you doing? Those are all symbols. One of the reasons that that he tells us not to have icons, you know what icons are? It's because what do? We go to the icons and we trust the icons rather than trusting the God of heaven. There's no sin in having a picture of Jesus loving little kids, but if you're going to that and worshiping it, there is. So that's what he's talking about there, okay? So God is coming to the camp. They said, woe is us, for nothing like this has happened before. Woe is us, for who shall deliver us from the hand of these mighty gods?
Right.
Who are the mighty gods it's talking about?
Well, they're assuming, because they worship gods. They don't know the one true God. They're assuming it's got to be mighty gods in that thing.
In the box.
Yeah, in that box. There they are.
Sort of like Pandora's box.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It could also be, add on top of that, it could be that because they've seen what happened or heard what happened, with Egypt, they could think these men were gods. Because what are the gods of their time? Their gods of their time are elevated people. They're not gods the way we talk about the God of heaven. I mean, they die, they have battles, they fight each other. Obviously, they fought Dagon, and instead of turning to God, what did they do? What did the Philistines do? He's hurting our God. We need to get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
But he's more powerful. Well, you know, okay.
So do they think the lords of the Philistines did they look to them as gods?
They could have. Because they beat the Egyptian army with no weapons of war. I mean, even when we get to the part where God is going to thunder, there's no instruments of war.
Mm-hmm.
So that's magic to them. It's like magic. So you must be a god that you can do that. And we don't know when you're going to do it because it seems arbitrary. I mean, this is a time in the age of if you study your Roman mythology and your Greek mythology, these are the times of the gods. Okay, verse 9. Take courage and be men, O Philistines. I'd love to know who's saying that. It doesn't give you any quote there. O Philistines, or you will become slaves to the Hebrews, as they have been slaves to you. Therefore, be men and fight. Oh,
that's right.
Okay. I, for some reason, have Judges 14:1 here, and I'm not sure why. Somebody want to look at Judges 14:1? Just read it when we get it.
14:1?
Yes, ma'am.
Then Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman, and Timnah, one of the daughters of the Philistines.
I have no idea why.
We did look that up.
Did we? Okay. Later on. Then. So the Philistines fought, and Israel was defeated, and every man fled to his tent, and the slaughter was very great. For there fell of Israel 30,000 soldiers.
They read that like 40,000.
30,000?
30,000?
Go on, there's more. Well, look at the anybody left. And the Ark of God was taken, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, died. They died in chapter 4. Did I skip something? Yes, I did. No, we didn't.
No?
Okay. And the Ark of God was taken. Now, Elijah Benjamin ran from the battle lines and came to Shiloh the same day with his clothes torn and dust on his head. And when he came, behold, Eli was sitting on his seat. Now, what did Eli ask him?
About the Ark.
Yes, so about the Ark. Why?
Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be there.
This is a man whose whole job is to take care of this ark.
Right.
He shouldn't have let it go in the first place, but he did. So it was the ark that was overwhelming to him. His heart was trembling for the ark of God, so the man came to tell it in the city, and all the city cried out. When Eli heard the noise, he asked what the commotion was. He was 98 years old. Now, in verse 18, what does it tell us about how long he judged?
40 years.
This is Eli judging 40 years. He started when he was how old?
58.
Yeah. I think he had things a little more figured out by then. Okay, verse 19. Then his daughter-in-law was pregnant and about to give birth. And what happened there?
Well, she died.
She died. Mm-hmm.
Well, you guys go for the bottom line.
Oh, she had a baby in there.
She had a baby.
She had a child. I always thought that was weird.
Died.
She claims
that the glory of God is departed.
So she emphasized the glory. What is the glory of God? If God called us to glorify Him, and Psalm says glorify Him and enjoy Him forever, what does that mean?
To acknowledge His praise.
It's giving back His due. We glorify God by repeating what we know about Him. It's giving back His due. So in this case, what is the glory which he's talking about? Because the name Ichabod does mean that. It means the glory has departed. Because Abad is glory. So Ichabod is the glory is gone or departed. So what?
How did you give birth and then have it? Die and then give birth?
Well, you have to remember, their form of writing is not like ours. We like to do things sequentially. Oriental mind looks at things like this. It's all part of the whole. And you can pull out things from all parts of it to tell your story, but they may be not in any kind of order. It also may be, they will say, who's dinging? What are you dinging? It's okay with me, but what are you doing?
I'm not doing nothing. It's my watch tells me you never notice. Okay. I'm out
of. See, you have that thing go off every minute? It also means, like, how you carry that through is if you say, I believe in the ark or the glory of God, but you don't live like you do, then the belief is not a true belief. It's a lie. So when we start looking at things, they do this. Dale on Sunday who was talking about Mark, and he said Mark takes the various parts of the stories, and the parts that fit together, he just puts in a line. So you read one chapter and you think you're doing a sequential, and you're not doing a sequential. You're doing this is what he does. This is what God does. This is to show you he is who he says he is. And then I'll go back to that. So you go, and you have to pay attention. This is what context is all about. Context means I pay attention. I don't take my Greek way of thinking into it, because my Greek way of thinking likes things in nice little boxes. But I need to become a Hebrew in this thinking and see, is this talking sequentially? Is he pulling something from another place? Is he bringing this into here to teach me something? If so, then I need to learn what it is. So what was the bottom line of that story? Two things. She gave birth and died. And what was the other?
Judgment. Sorry? Judgment on the on Eli and his sons.
Which was horrifying, but for her, it was the most important thing. Was the glory of God, and that was the ark, and she knew somehow that whole thing was also wrong. So that's what he's trying to tell you. So we don't even know anything about her except for this. Why do we hear about her? She said, "The glory of the Lord is present in Israel, for the ark of God was taken."
I wonder why she died, because you understand from the prophecy about Eli, about and no old man will be in the house.
Well, number one, it ain't up to me, it's up to God. But number two, what did it even say? When about the time of her death, the woman who stood by her said, "Don't be afraid." Why?
She's getting afraid.
Carrying on the name, her name,
right.
The family.
A provider. To, yeah.
And it's a son.
Right.
It's the son who does that. So,
so that's supposed to be a comfort to her at the
right.
time, but she's still on something.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which is actually a good thing, I think. This story is the way it seems to be. You think she had the right value.
I thought it was easy. Mm-hmm.
What I got from it was I don't think she was quite due yet, because when she heard it, she said her pain, and they say her pain came on her because of the shock of the news of the ark being taken. It gave her a shock, and her pain came on her. So I got from that it might not have been quite her due date. She
but
had the baby early.
Was about to give something, right?
But even if it made it happen really fast.
Yeah.
Jamie was born really fast, and it was a really good thing. Yeah, it helped her.
I mean, it's not like they had a lot of ladies.
She died, right?
I imagine they lost a lot of women childbirth then.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the shock of losing her husband or her brother-in-law, I mean, those are the ones that would be taking care of her, and just kind of a difficult situation.
Which is why when we read the story, we want to know what the bottom line is. Why was this even in there? But I do think there is, we're going
to
read
take care of the baby.
Later on in the books, that there is still a line. They just never get old. So we'll get there when we get there. So what was in the ark, with the ark, around the ark? What was the ark? What was part of the ark?
You mean inside?
Inside, outside.
No,
the tablets.
Right?
The mercy seat.
Mercy seat is where?
On top of the cherubim.
Okay, so you have the cherubim sitting there with their wings. So you look at them and you're seeing their wings. And where's the mercy seat?
Under it.
Okay. Well, under the cherubim.
Yeah.
Right, so it's on top of the ark.
On top of the ark.
What else did we talk about?
The golden seed.
Okay. What was in front of the ark?
Well, in one place it says the book of in Deuteronomy 31, the book of the law was beside the ark.
Right.
In Deuteronomy 10,
oh, yeah,
the
right.
two tablets were inside the ark.
Yeah.
We also had the altar. And later on when you get to Revelation, that's the altar where the prayers of the saints mm-hmm. are there. So it's the altar that's right before the ark. The problem in history is it's inside of the veil, it's outside of the veil. It's inside of the veil, it's outside of the veil. In fact, both ways, and I don't know what it
and
was
a budding
to
rod.
What? Aaron's rod that
yeah.
budded.
Yeah, Aaron's rod, right.
And manna at one time.
Back when
oh, yeah, the manna.
Right, but back whenever they were in Egypt.
Yeah. So you looked at the Exodus 25 and the Exodus 29. Anything anybody wants to add? Any of your cross references? How about if we look up Joshua 3:17, because that's going to have a lot of it in there. I'm just going to read from the next. it shall be a continual burning offering for all your generations at the doorway of the tent of meeting before the Lord, where I will meet with you to speak to you there. I will meet there with the sons of Israel, and it shall be consecrated by my glory. That's where the word glory came at, why she knew that. And then 43 says, in the covering, covered the tent of the meeting's glory, the Lord filled the tabernacle. When we talk about the Shekinah glory, that's what it's talking about. There is no place in the Bible that uses the word Shekinah. I'm not even sure what Shekinah means, but that's what it's talking about. The Shekinah glory is the glory that filled the tabernacle. Okay, so Joshua 3. I'm going to start there. Start at 2. At the end of 3 days, the officers went through the midst of the camp and commanded the people, saying, when you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God with the Levitical priests carrying it, then you shall set out from your place. So it's so where is the Ark kept when they're moving? In the front. They're following the Ark. Okay, and however there shall be between you and a distance of about 2,000 cubits by measure, do not come near it, that you may know the way by which you shall go, but do not pass this way before. And then Joshua said to the people, consecrate yourselves, or tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. And Joshua spoke to the priests, saying, take up the Ark of the Covenant and cross over ahead of the people. So they took up the Ark of the Covenant and went ahead of the people. I think that story was on the minds of the Israelites. Not the point of the story. What would the point of this story be so far? In fact, think of them coming across the wilderness from Egypt. What did they follow?
The Ark.
Why? What's God teaching them?
He's leading
to follow him.
Yeah. He's leading them.
Follow.
And we like, I mean, we like the verse that says, fix your eyes on Jesus. Mm-hmm. This is that picture of fixing your eyes on the source. Fix your eyes on God. And he gave you a perfect example by being up in front there. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's see. You shall moreover, verse 8. Oh, verse 7. Now that the Lord said to Joshua, this day I will begin to exalt you in the sight of Israel, that they may know, just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. You shall moreover command the priests who are carrying the Ark of the Covenant, saying, when you come to the edge of the waters of the Jordan, you shall stand still in the Jordan. And Joshua said to Israel, come and hear, and hear the words of the Lord your God. Joshua said, by this you shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will assuredly dispose you from the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites. Behold, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth is crossing over ahead of you into the Jordan now. Then take for yourselves 12 men from the tribes, and you get this whole picture. And what did the water do?
Rolled up.
When?
When they stepped in.
When the priest stepped in. So what does that tell us?
Step in.
He has to obey. That is a picture. But it's still, you don't go until they go. You don't go until the ark goes. You follow. The priest who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the middle of the Jordan while all Israel crossed on dry ground. And again, if you're sitting there with this heaped up water, and you're walking through, and the priests are standing right there, what is it telling you?
God is with
you. God is with you. He's in control. You do not need to be afraid. You do not need to walk with fear. I mean, how many times in your life have you walked in the middle of a river or a lake, and all of a sudden it's dry ground? This is teaching something. This is something that is to be passed on to other generations, and it's not that example of just what happened, but why? God is faithful. He is here, even on dry ground, in the middle of the river.
I did feel confused at that part, because, it's God who's having this happen, and so they do end up learning to rely on this ark. So, but at the same time...
But what is the ark supposed to represent?
The presence of God.
The presence of God. He
yeah.
is here.
But where's that place, you know, like we were saying how they were relying on the ark to do it. Okay. Because I wonder where that transformation is, where they should have gotten that.
Well, let's think a little bit about this. We've just gone through Judges. We've come up from that. What did we learn in Judges?
Every man did that which is right in his own eyes.
Every man did that which is right in his own eyes. So, okay, but at the same time we see the lights of people falling. In fact, what is really weird is we look at that and think those were the judges of Israel. Is that all the judges of Israel? We meet them right here, don't we? And at the same time Samson was judging, who else was judging?
Samuel
was judging at the same time. He was not considered one of the judges. Who else was? Eli?
Yeah, there was overlap.
Well, they overlapped. Or maybe there are more judges all over Israel that we don't know anything about.
Right.
Keep running into prophets. We don't even know who they are. Yeah.
What I see, what stands out to me is in the first part of Judges or somewhere in there where Joshua dies. And there's that a verse in there that says that the people didn't remember anymore the stories that had been passed down all that time, that all the people that had actually been there for the event, now they were gone. Okay, so what I'm seeing here is they kind of know some things, but they've kind of got it all mixed up, and they're not remembering and haven't been taught the way that it's supposed to be.
They've got the heart. Remember? What makes
Hearts
them remember?
Passing it on to the children.
Well, that's what it's supposed to do. But
yeah.
The person standing up in front reminds them.
Yeah, and that's not happening.
The
right.
ark
yeah.
standing up in front by its very nature reminds them.
It reminds them of the presence of the Lord, but they didn't know how to use it properly.
No.
What it was supposed to do.
Because what?
And the same thing when they went to worship, it showed him only going up to worship once a year, and they're supposed to go three times a year, and just stuff like that. They just, it's like they got bits and pieces of things, but they don't have the whole thing.
Well, how come we have more than bits and pieces of things?
Well, leadership. Joshua, the leadership did what God said to do. People followed. And here in this story, in Samuel, people are still following the leadership. I mean, you see that there's three when people came to the camp. The elders of Israel, they're the ones that said, they're the ones who wanted to take the ark.
Yeah.
They didn't ask.
They didn't follow the rules.
They're not doing it.
That had been going on.
Okay, so what was the transition?
We also have the Bible that we can read.
That we can read. How many Christians do you know that don't crack a Bible? And I'm not saying this to judge. I don't want us going around judging people. But because we have Sunday morning preaching and maybe a Sunday school class, we somehow think that's enough. What is missing with that?
The personal.
That God is personal. That He walks me through the struggles of my life, the joys of my life, the praise in my life. So every moment we need to be grabbing a hold of what we know about God. Not out of fear. Not out of I'm going to follow this list. It's not about a list. What is it about?
Communion with God.
Knowing God, the presence of God. And we can get away from that really fast. And we see with each successive generation, and this is why I keep saying there are no Christian grandchildren. There are no second generation. It's all first generation. It doesn't matter what your mommy and daddy did. It doesn't matter. I mean, it's great if they love the Lord and they pass that on to you, but that doesn't ensure you're going to love the Lord. And if we just keep walking in the trappings of the past and not making it alive in today's manna, we're going to end up in the same place. The difference is that we have the Holy Spirit. We're not going to lose our salvation, but we're going to be known to the life of God. To the life of community, learning how to function together as community. So when we watch them, they made the decision as a community, but it wasn't based on truth, right?
Well, in chapter 3, too, that first verse was sent to the ministry before Eli, and word from the Lord was rare.
Because there's that 2,000 cubits.
Right, yeah, I've been thinking that the whole time.
Maybe it wasn't
really
wide.
Yeah, that's what I... It could have been. It could have been very wide.
There were a lot of them.
I think the answer in all of that always is God's holy.
Yeah.
Because even with a high priest, I mean, it's not logical on any level except for a God level that one man can go in the presence of God one day a year and it's going to take care of all the sin that it's atoned for everybody for a year. What makes him better? Some of those high priests were horrible people. And in fact, when we get to the time of Jesus, they were the really bad guys. But you know what? God still honored that position. And what that tells us, what does that tell us about leadership, or maybe a husband who's not a particularly right on kind of guy and
accountable.
I don't have to obey him because he's not blah 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 blah.
Do you
see that
in the Bible?
It's honoring the position. Where the Lord taught me that one was honoring my father. I grew up hating my dad. I mean hating him. And one of the first things the Lord hit me with was needing to forgive him and to honor his position. And he also let me know very soon it didn't matter how good a father he was. It was the role that God put him in my life. And so who am I honoring when I honor my dad?
God.
I'm honoring God. So it's the same here. I've shown, if you have been in my classes for years, just it's like a big circle here. And here I am, and here my husband or the leader or somebody I don't like is. And what I'm really doing is seeing the God behind all of this. So my trust is in him. Our ability to go forward in life, even in unjust circumstances, is based on the fact that God is over all of this. And so with here, you almost have to ask yourself, what would I do if I were there and I saw these guys and it was wrong?
Yeah,
it's there are times, and this is what people who don't believe in war as a Christian will say, there are times that you have to take a stand and pay the price against false leadership. But you do it honorably, and you do it respectfully, and you do it gratefully, and you just let happen because we're trusting God for his purposes. Do we not remember the story of Joseph? Was that an honorable situation that he was in? But he treated it with honor. And so God was able to use him in the history of Israel because of it and save his people.
Thinking with women, you know, Abigail and her awful husband, mm-hmm. and that situation where everybody would have been wiped out had she not done what she knew was right.
For the right reasons.
She did it the right way, too.
Yeah.
But
the Lord honored that,
didn't
he?
Because you know.
There is times that we have to stand against what is wrong if God has said it. Not if you feel it. If God has said it, it's wrong.
And when we know something's wrong.
I remember.
There's things we know that are wrong.
I had a friend who once told me, because she was a brand new Christian, and she once told me it. She was supposed to submit to her husband, obey her husband, because that's what her father-in-law gave her this book on obeying God, obeying her husband like God. And she said to me, well, if my husband told me I was to marry somebody, then I'd have to do that. And I went, whoa, we better talk about this. She wouldn't have anyway. She would rather die than do that. But if your husband asks you to, how many husbands in a marriage have asked a wife to go through an abortion? That's a problem. Why is that a problem?
That's murder.
And who does life belong to?
God.
It's acknowledging this is not my life, and I didn't even choose this. This child belongs to God. I don't know what God's going to do with it, but it belongs to him. Okay. So, we saw in Hebrews 9 the various parts of the ark. Anything anybody wants to add to that? All right. What do we learn about the Philistines in Genesis 10:14? What was the source? So where did they come from? Where did Israel come from, too? Where did the Philistines come from? Ham. So it came through the line of Ham. Where did Israel come from? It came through the line of Shem, which is very interesting because... And I have done this before, but I can only keep so many things in my brain. In the Middle East, what are the different foundational places that those people all come from? Because we know the Arabs come from the same place, the Jews do. They're all Shemites. But the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Syrians, the... people down below in Africa, they're not, they may be Muslims, but they're not Shemites. So that's an interesting discussion and study all by itself. Anything else you would like to bring up?
You know, these 25 questions for the difference while you observe, right?
I actually have my notes. I don't have anything written in. What was the question?
Why, after all you've observed, why do you think it is really lost a battle?
What number is that?
Oh, there it is. Four.
Gotcha.
I kind of thought, this is just me throwing it out there, but I thought maybe the Lord had left the tabernacle. I'll hang around with it. But later you see him, you know, the tabernacle being in the presence of the Philistines, and him, God doing stuff there. But I just wondered if maybe he thought, you know, I'm not going to be around here. He doesn't have to stay in any particular place.
Well, you know he isn't. Yeah, he's on the present. So why was he with the ark in the first place?
To meet the people.
To meet the people. So he chose, just like when Jesus limited himself.
Right.
your funeral.
Well, he is. Go to Ezekiel 9:10. He left. The Mount of Glory left Jerusalem. Left the temple and then left Jerusalem. But Jesus lent himself to a body. For what purpose? To follow through what God called him to. So when God is with the ark, is he only with the ark?
No.
No, so he's everywhere. It's almost like a condensed God. Right. That's exactly right. That's where he meets us. Your question actually has an answer in our verses, so let's keep going. Oh my gosh, there's a lot of cross references. Anything I want to say? Any questions? Well, you guys read it all, right? Great. Actually, I'm going to have you read your stuff before we set five. We're going to get into Dagon stuff.
Right, and it plays into where she's in question six, where she was talking about, let's see, the roles of the Philistines, and she talks about it as tracing the Philistines. So the papers that I handed out, just started, some of you have seen some of these before, back whenever we were in Judges, started because Miss Charlene over there had a question about, in her memory, she remembered something about the Philistines had come from Crete. And so, please, if you've heard this already, just listen.
Learn again. There is no way everybody learned all of that information.
Okay. I'm sorry.
That's why we repeat things.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also why I had to listen again to, what did I say? I remember what I said. So, anyway, and so what I've done in my Bible, you can do it however you want. This is just because I like to study things. I've got a thing called Tracing the Philistines. And it's just like she did, but I do it a little bit differently. And so I start out in Genesis 10:1, where it's just talking about the generations. Because you kind of have to back up to Noah's sons there. And we did a little bit of that just a minute ago. So there, in 10:1, it says the generations were of Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Okay, the sons of Noah. Then whenever you go down to verse 6, okay, and you see the sons of Ham, keep that in mind, were Cush and Mizraim and Put and Canaan. Okay. And usually we talk about the sons of Canaan and the Canaanites and all of that. But pay attention to Mizraim there, that was one of his sons. Okay. Then whenever you, and these were in our study, whenever you go down to verse 13 and 14 of Genesis 10, okay, and it says, Mizraim became the father of Ludim and Anamim and all those memes. Okay. Okay, and then in verse 14, pay attention because right there it says, in my Bible it says, Pathrusim and Kazluhim, and in parenthesis in my Bible it says, from which came the Philistines. I don't know if your versions all read that. Okay, and then, and Kaphtorim, okay, Kaphtorim, okay. So those are important. If you just tuck that away a little bit, that Kaphtorim, Kaphtorim. If you look at a map, so she doesn't give you a map, but so I put a little map on here on the handout that I gave you, and I drew in Crete on there because it doesn't show Crete on the map, but it does show general directions that Noah's three sons went whenever they were divided up, okay? And so Crete there in the middle of the Mediterranean, on my Bible atlas, and this is just it's just an old cheapo atlas, but I use it a lot. And so on this one, for Crete, it calls it Kaphtor, okay? And then another version of Kaphtor is Kaphtorim, like we've seen. Okay? And so, whenever you... so, Crete is our modern day, what we call it, but in the old times it was called Captor, Captorine. Okay, then if you go to, I'm going to take you through a little bit different scriptures than what she took you through. So if you go over to Jeremiah 47, so in your Bible, okay. So you've got Jeremiah, the major prophet, what's back there. Okay, so Jeremiah 47, verse 4, okay, and it's the next step in tracing where the Philistines came from. Not all the stuff about them, because we know a lot about them from the other scriptures, but as far as where they came from, okay? And so in Jeremiah 47, 4, Jeremiah has a vision, and that's kind of the context. And we're not going to go into all of that because we're just looking at tracing a line here. Okay? On account of the day that is coming to destroy all the Philistines, okay? And to cut off from Tyre and Sidon. And if you look at, you can see it on, in your study, she has this map right here. Right there. Okay, it's the Israel territories, ancient and modern. Okay, and it's back in your, I think I got this from the appendix of it. Okay, and so on the coastland you can see Tyre and Sidon. So that's what that verse is talking about. And then the Philistines are further down the coast where they settled in the Gaza there, in that area. And then they kind of branched out from there. Okay, so Jeremiah 47:4, on account of the day that is coming to destroy all the Philistines, to cut off from Tyre and Sidon every ally that is left. For the Lord is going to destroy the Philistines, the remnant of the coastland of Captor. So there's that word Captor again. Okay, and again, it's the rest of it from Crete, because they migrated from Crete, not very far across the Mediterranean there, to the place Gaza and those areas in there. Those they had cities there. Okay.
There was a migration of the sea people.
Yes.
There were seven different cultures.
Yes. Exactly. Okay. Then from there, we're going to trace them over to Amos. The book of Amos in your Bible. Okay, so it's minor prophets. I do them in groups of four. Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah. Okay? So when you find Hosea, you just keep going past Joel to Amos. Okay? Amos 9, verse 7. And again, it's another prophecy about the Philistines. Okay? And 9, verse 7, he's talking about, we're not going to go a lot into the context, but just, are you not as the sons of Ethiopia to me, O sons of Israel, declares the Lord? Have I not brought up Israel from the land of Egypt, and the Philistines from Captor, and the Arameans from Kir? So this is just another verse saying, okay, it wasn't an obscure verse kind of thing. It's mentioned in several places in your Bible, okay, that he's brought them out from Captor. Okay. Then look on your Philistine paper that I gave you. It would be the one after the map there. Okay? And I got these from the JewishVirtualLibrary.org. The address is at the top of your paper there if you wanted to look up online. It's a good resource. It has a lot of different things in there. Okay? And so, first, where it says the Philistines are referred as the descendants of, like we just read, Kaslushim in Genesis 10:14 and also in Exodus 13:17, and we didn't go there. Known as the seafaring nations, the Philistines were a non-Semitic people who left Crete, like we talked about, and arrived in Canaan at the beginning of the 12th century B.C. Now this says B.C.E. because it's the common era that we think of it as before Christ. Okay, B.C., 12th century. The Philistines inhabited the Mediterranean coast of Canaan during the period of the book of Judges, like we know, and they founded the five principalities where we get the five lords, Gaza, Ashkelon, Ashdod, Ekron, and Gath. Okay, Then we're not going to worry about the rest of that. We're just going through tracing them, okay? And the third paragraph there in the Philistine paper, the name Palestine, now we're going to go a little bit different here. We're going to bring us all the way up to modern times with this. But remember the Philistines here. The name Palestine originates from the Philistine inhabitants of the land of Judea. After the Romans conquered the region, and we read a little bit about that in your study, in the 2nd century Common Era, or we would say A.D., in the year of our Lord, Anno Domini, the Romans used the term Palestine. Who used the term? The Romans used the term Palestinia to refer to the region in an attempt to minimize Jewish attachment to the land. It's not something that the Jewish people themselves have ever called the land. They don't refer to it that way. It's something that the conquering Romans, whenever you're conquered by a country, that country, that army can change it to be whatever they want. They could call it Detroit if they wanted to, but they called it Palestine.
Does the Pala have another meaning that the Romans gave it?
You would have to look that up. That's a good question. Okay, and so the Arabic use of the term Philistine, F-I-L-A-S-T-I-N, and I apologize for this small type, but it's from this Latin root, okay? Then you go to the Palestine paper, which is next, okay? And the first paragraph says, though the definite origins of the word Palestine have been debated for years, Bonnie, and are still not known for sure, the name is believed to be derived from the Egyptian and Hebrew word Peleshet, okay? P-E-L-E-S-H-E-T. Okay, roughly translated to mean rolling or migratory. It was used to describe the inhabitants of the land to the northeast of Egypt, Philistines. They were an Aegean people, as we saw in the Mediterranean Sea, in that area close up to the Aegean Sea. Okay? And so they were an Aegean people, more, and this is very important for us too, more closely related to the Greeks and with no connection ethically, linguistically, or historically with Arabia, who conquered in the 12th century before Christ, the Mediterranean coastal plain that is now Israel and Gaza, okay? So they were clearly, as you said, seafaring people. They came in. They weren't connected linguistically. They didn't have common history, none of that, okay? So they came in. Let's see. And just a diversion here. In Exodus and Deuteronomy, I said it incorrectly on the Joshua or Judges 6 tape, but it's from Exodus and Deuteronomy where God talks about that the peoples are there in the land. He's not wiping them all out all at once, because otherwise the wild beasts would be too much for you, and he's allowing them to tend the crops. So God had a purpose for the Philistines in being there. Okay, it was part of his plan. Okay, now on the paper, the Palestine, if you skip down to the third paragraph there, we're moving on through history here, okay? Under the Ottoman Empire, which was 1517 to 1917, and 1917 was the middle of the First World War, okay? And so in that part of the world, the Ottoman Empire have now become the conquerors, okay? The Romans are gone. The rise and fall of the Roman Empire, all of that. But they're gone. It's the Ottoman Empire, okay? And the term Palestine was used as a general term to describe the land south of Syria, okay? And on several, well, on this map that you have in there, you can see the location of where Syria is. So the Ottomans were using it in general. Everything down there is Palestine. They were following what the Romans had designated some of that, okay? And again, is it the Jewish people renaming it? No. It's the new conquerors, the Ottomans, okay? It's not an official designation. Okay, and it says in that paragraph, in fact, many Ottomans and Arabs who lived in Palestine during that time, referred to the areas as southern Syria and not as Palestine. So it was called different things, but by the Ottomans it was called that. Okay, then now we're coming into more modern times. After World War One, the name Palestine was applied to the territory that was placed under the British mandate. Who owns the areas now?
Britain.
The British. Okay. And they're all for renaming things according to what they want to. They do it in every country that they go in. We won't go into that. Okay. But
debate.
Yeah. So under the British mandate, this area included not only present day Israel, but also present day Jordan. And along back to your little map here that's in your book, it shows Jordan to the east of the Jordan River. Okay? And so they lumped the whole thing. It's all Palestine. Okay. Now, keeping on reading on that paper, leading up to Israel's independence in 1948, okay, this is when, you can read it in history, a bunch of Israelites went back. There was a big battle. They took it.
Movie Exodus.
Yes, with Paul Newman. Watch that. Yeah, you can watch that movie. It was for cliff notes of what happened during that time. Okay. It was common for the, pay attention to this, because this comes up to present day. It was common for the international press to label the Jews, not Arabs, living in the mandate as Palestinians. Ah, what is the press calling the Jews? Palestinians, not Israelis, not Israelites, okay? And that happens to our present day, okay? You hear it in the news all the time about it's Palestine, they're all Palestinians, okay? And then reading on, it was not until years after Israeli independence that the Arabs living in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, those two terms also are press terms. They were looking at an easy way to talk about those areas. So they named it the Gaza Strip, the West Bank. It's not anything the Israelites were calling it, okay? And so they labeled all of that area, everybody in it, as Palestinians, okay? And just a note of trivia in that paragraph. In fact, Arabs cannot even correctly pronounce the word Palestine in their native tongue, referring to the area rather as Philistine. Okay, the word Palestine or Philistine does not appear in the Quran. Okay, the term Peleshet, which is where some of that came from, appears in the Jewish Tanakh no fewer than 250 times. Okay, and then in the Judges 6, I just kind of in general said it was an ancient document, but I've given you a paper of what the Tanakh actually is. If you go to the next page, okay, and this doesn't have anything to do with the origin, but just so you know, because she did have us count how many times Philistine and Philistines were mentioned, okay? And so in their Tanakh, which mentions it no fewer than 250 times, this is what the Tanakh is. Essentially, it's in our Bible, okay? It's the Pentateuch, the first five laws, the prophets, and what they call the writing. Okay, so there you go. And so just kind of the moral of the story after learning about where the Philistines came from, for us today in present day, the moral of the story for us is it any wonder that the common people who don't read history, who don't read the Bible, is it any wonder that they cannot for the life of them see what is all the fuss in the Middle East about? They're all Palestinians. Can't they just get along? Because they don't have the context of history about God gave this land to the Israelites. It's not Palestine. It's Israel. And they don't have that context. Okay? And so we can't blame people for not understanding what all the fuss is about. But some people should know better, and they don't. Okay? They don't. And in the UN right now, there's things going on where they're just trying to just eliminate all the Jewish history from all of them.
So,
yeah. Yeah, they're just twisting everything around. So that's why it's important, really important, for you to understand where that all came from, because it affects you today, and it affects the news that you hear, the people you talk to, everything. They just don't know. So there you go.
If they did know their history, they would see how they've been persecuted from the very beginning, and that very persecution ought to lead them to know there is a God and there's somebody's against it.
Yep, exactly. So there's your 10-minute quick note of that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it's not
Joshua Arafat.
Right, right. Yeah, didn't go into Arafat there, but Charlene, what, you want to tell him that?
Arafat, yeah. What are you going to tell us?
I'm not going to say. I said you didn't go into it.
No, I didn't go into it.
But see, the whole point is, from Romans on, they want to deny Israel, the Jews, Israel.
Right.
So every country around them wants to eliminate them.
Right.
You know what's so funny? Outside of the fact that they brought a lot of water in, that just looks like a godforsaken country. What the heck? I mean, why is the whole world, you know, it's more than just wanting the land. We were, well, anyway. Okay. So, I have some notes I'll send out, too, when I send the stuff on Shiloh to you. And you can read or not read. It's up to you. But it'll repeat exactly what she talked about and more. Okay, so how did you title chapter 1? I mean, chapter 4. How did you title our first chapter 4? What did you, what was sort of the bottom line of how you read it? Samuel's. And it doesn't have to be this. Just whatever will help you remember. Prophecy. Phil. And Philistines took the earth. So we come to chapter 5, and what do we have in chapter 5? Where is the ark? Where is it?
Okay,
so it starts up. Where is it?
Ashdod. A-S-H-D-O-D.
Ashdod. That one I can actually say. It's all those fancy isms and stuff that make it a little hard. Okay, so it starts out. Brought it from Ebenezer to Ashdod.
Well, it back in chapter 4, the people, it had been in Shiloh.
Right.
Then the people, the elders, whoever, brought it over there. Yeah. So it went from Shiloh to Ebenezer.
Okay, yeah. So it started in Shiloh. Okay. Then it went to Ebenezer.
So that's where the paddle was.
And I couldn't spell that if I...
It's all E's, if that helps.
Well, I can spell things I can see, but if the word gets too long, I can't see the middle of a word.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, dyslexia.
I can follow it. I can't see it.
There's no two
weeks
in a row.
It's like go to Hawaii, everything is vowel, non-vowel. Kind of hilarious. Okay, so they went from Ebenezer to Ashdod. What did the Philistines do? You have two, I almost called them Philippines yesterday. what did the Philistines do? Thinking, Philippines? I've seen that. One of those PH words. Okay, so the Philistines, where did they bring it when they got to Ashdod? They went into their temple. To Dagon. What happened there?
Dagon got judged.
Kind of humorously.
Yeah.
How? What did that look like?
Cut off
We fell down before the ark.
Yeah, well, the first time you just fell down, or the first day.
I think it's interesting to come face down.
Yeah.
Before the ark. What does that look like? If I fell down, face down, what would you think
worshiping.
I was doing?
Bowing before the covenant.
Unless they think that it's just a mistake, you put it back up again, what happens?
He fell down again on his face and broke off his head and his hands.
He was a mess. You sort of got the picture. Their God was being bothered.
What is that? This memory.
Crushing. Think about, even in Daniel, when they have the statue, there are parts that are crushed. You have to think about what those things are. Whenever, is it real? No. So first he has them fall over and worship to show the people that he's not the God.
Give him a chance.
To repent. Mm-hmm. Good. And they didn't hear it. But if I were a Philistine, and I'm sitting there, didn't we just win? And weren't there like 30,000 of their people dead? Why am I afraid? Why would I even be afraid of the God?
Wasn't Dagon an idol that was pictured as half man, half fish?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's interesting. You talked about Cush. Cush begat Nimrod. And Nimrod had Dagon as an idol before.
I didn't know that.
McGee told me that.
You could actually listen to McGee. I already know. Why would they use a fish?
The coastal people.
They're the sea people. In fact, at that time, the Mediterranean was called the Sea of Philistia. I'm going to do it wrong all the time here. I've got the Philippines in my head.
Philistia.
It's going to become the Philippines. It's the Sea of the Philippines.
You write that down, you're wrong.
The Dagon was a mermaid. Sounds like it.
A mermaid.
But he's also described as the father of Baal.
Yes, he's the father of Baal. So best way to start seeing this is maybe take a little extra piece of paper and put Dagon on it. And when you learn things about it, put it in there. And when you learn about Ashdod, have paper with Ashdod in it. And by the time we're done with these, when we've gone all the way through Kings and Chronicles, we're going to know a lot of history. Right now, it seems like this huge amount of stuff and places and things and trying to find them on the map. But little bit by little bit as we work on it and try and make it our own. I can even get a little spiral notebook and just put a name of one of the things that we're looking at. Not everything, but if we study like Ashdod, if we study Shiloh, if we study that, it'll start making more sense to us as we see the consistency or how it grows in what we're studying now. So,
why did they, do you think that they took them to that temple and start with? I mean, it was like, all our gods should be together and now we're going to be out of our...
Well, what do we know about the Philistines and the gods they worshipped?
They had more than one.
It wasn't just Dagon. They just gathered the gods of the nations around them. That's what they did.
Well, they'll
incorporate that god to their... He's the one who won with Egypt. So, in fact, when they first came as the people over the land, they went to Egypt at first because they wanted to control Egypt, and they couldn't. So that's when they went up. If you think about your map, Egypt is down out of the map. So they went to Egypt, they landed in Egypt, and started coming up along the Mediterranean because they're water people. So where'd they go next? And why? They're in Ashdod. What happens to them in Ashdod? Okay, so the people get tumors.
Just the men.
Just the men. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, young and old both.
That's your warriors. That deals with warriors.
I have just a quick side question here. In verse 4, it says the palms of his hands were cut off, not broken off. To me, that indicates a clean, clean slice, I think.
Sounds like it to me, too.
So, how did that
happen? I don't know.
The God
thing just haphazardly happened,
Yeah, right. It was just happened. He fell over and it perfectly cut it.
Oh,
it
didn't have any legs to cut off.
Right.
I'll look the word up for you. I'll look the word up for you and send it to you. So you can even figure it out.
Okay.
Okay, cut.
It says severed in verse 7.
Oh, hence is severe. Oh, that's severe.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
That's okay. I can read that, so it's sorry. When the men of Ashdod saw that it was so, they said, "The ark of God of Israel must not remain with us, for His hand is severe on us and our and on Dagon our God." So, what did they do?
Send it to Gath.
Where did they went to Gath?
Mm-hmm.
What is Gath?
Another one of their cities.
Yeah.
And another one of their lords.
So they have how many lords?
Five
lords, and each of them is lord of the city, and so they're sending them to one of the other lords. Okay, what happens there?
They get two lords.
They get them too.
Well, and you have to, I have to wonder, I mean, among other things, about how it got there without everybody dying. But on the other hand, is wondering at the conversation of, look what it's doing to us. We'll send it over there. Yeah, get rid of it. Get this out of the way.
So, what were the tumors? More than likely, in most people today think that that was the first of the bubonic plague. I mean, we have historically tried to make them hemorrhoids, but it's a whole lot worse. I had hemorrhoids, and God wasn't judging me, you know.
Yeah, but if you have bubonic plague,
that's
diarrhea,
hemorrhoids.
Yes, but that's a secondary thing. That's probably not the one you're most. And when we think of, and even like boils, we think of Job and his boils. They make it sound like boils are just like a little pimple on top. No. Anybody ever here have a boil? Scottish. Scottish get boils.
I have.
It'll take years sometimes for those things to go, and I've had to have them lanced down. I mean, they have little tails and everything. Those are not fun things.
Gross.
They're not. Just okay. So, the hand of the Lord was against the city. With very great confusion, He smote the men again of the city, young and old, so that the tumors broke out in them. So, what did they do? So, it went to Ekron.
Let's send it over there now.
Yes. It's killing everybody. And every city it goes into is taking life. E-K-R-O-N. And what happened with them? They got them too?
Yep.
Did he add anything?
Well, the people were afraid.
Yeah.
That's kind of important. Because we're going to be afraid a couple of times. We saw that with the Philistines. Bless you. Before there was ever a war at all, they were afraid. Because what? Why were they afraid in chapter 4? The Philistines.
They heard what God had done.
Because they knew they heard what God had done to the Egyptians. So and they called him God. They were afraid because God had done it. Okay. So why is there fear here? They know where it's coming from. So, they said, verse 11, they sent therefore and gathered the Lord of the Philistines and sent away the ark of God of Israel to its own place so that it will not. So there was a deadly confusion throughout the city, and the hand of God was very heavy there. The men who did not die were smitten with tumors, and the cry of the city went up to heaven. That's where it was supposed to be, right? Okay, so who was Jonah in chapter 5? And that was in Ashdod, in Gath, in Ekron. Okay, so, and they were afraid because they didn't see this going. Okay, so in chapter 6, where is the ark? Starts in Ekron, and how long had the ark been with the Philistines? It's important to remember this because Israel's still not going to get this back for many, many years. And we want to think about why. Philistines called for the priests and the diviners, saying, "What shall we do with the ark of the Lord? Tell us how we shall send it to its place." Who did they call for?
Their priests and their diviners.
How do you know it's theirs and not Israel's? Yeah, you do.
Well, we know that Israel doesn't have diviners.
That's exactly right. Why?
Because they're forbidden.
Because they're forbidden.
Yeah.
They play with the occultic arts. So it's their priests and diviners or diviners or whatever. And what do they tell them?
They'll send it back empty.
Why? Why would they say that?
See, that's why I asked that question, because why was it empty?
No, they
it's supposed to have stuff in it.
It isn't empty.
It isn't. Right.
It's not empty.
Do not send it empty.
Right.
It just means, yeah.
Send it with a gift.
Yes.
You, with a guilt offering, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to send it back with
something. Yeah, but they send the stuff is still in
an extra box.
We agree.
They didn't put it in.
Right. So it had, yeah, it had to do with,
it's like,
you know, it's
an
sort of like Christmas.
Don't
send them home with nothing.
Bring home with a nice bag.
Well, they want this plague of boils to stop.
Yeah. Right.
And, yeah. And that's their big reason.
And what do you do with a god when he's not nice to you?
You appease him.
You try to appease him. Buy him off some way. And how would you do that? Well, gold. In the forms of those things that are happening. Has God told them to do this?
No.
Did they ask God about
no.
it?
They're
again doing what is right in their own eyes, and I mean the whole world is. Israel's not supposed to, because they have the truth. But
I was wondering if we know if the Philistines opened the ark, would they have opened it? Wouldn't they have been struck dead?
Why would they be struck dead? Go ahead. Why would they be struck dead? But again, it's not magic. This is not magic. Who was not supposed to open the ark?
No magic.
Israel had the rule. This is why if you read Galatians 3, you understand that God deals with Israel differently. They have the law. The Gentiles of that time did not have the law. God does not hold them.
I do for 2 days. Part of that.
This is an arbitrary God who wants to be.
I don't cope with those very often.
This is the God who's trying to teach Israel who he is. Mm-hmm. This is why their punishment is so much harder.
Do you think that's why the Israelites opened up to see what the Philistines might put in the Saturday? Or?
They weren't supposed to. And they paid a price for it.
I was wondering if they opened it up just because it was something they didn't get to see all the time.
Right.
The common people.
Still not doing it in the order
that
God called them to.
Or they're getting in there. It's just building it out.
Okay, so.
No, it's cold.
Where does it go next? They don't want to send it away empty. They're going to fill it up with five golden tumors and five golden mice.
They're going to send it on its way and to see where it goes.
Yeah.
So.
Where did it go?
Why
would they? Yeah, what was that all about?
Well,
the test.
Right, the test. Yeah.
Still might just be coincidence.
Right, right. That's right.
Well, a meow cow will go back, won't go away from its calf. It'll, you know, it'll go back. So they kept the calf and sent them part with the meow cow. And if they kept going straight and didn't turn around and come back, then they knew that it was the right way.
It wasn't natural.
Yeah, it is not natural for a mama cow to let the baby go. We've done it by our house, and they separate them, they scream.
Yeah, it says
all day long.
So, what did they learn about God? The Philistines. What did the Philistines learn about God?
He judged him.
This really was for me. Look at verse 9. Verse 9. Watch if it goes by the way of his own territory to Bathsheba. Then he has done us this great evil. But if not, then we will know that it was not his hand that struck us. It just happened by chance. Well, they're not talking about a God they know, are they? So in many ways, they're beginning there. I mean, they need the spiral notebook. I learned about God this morning. He doesn't like day God.
Just thinking, if they did happen to open the ark, like, what's this deal with the jar of this stuff and this rod and these commandments, these tablets, and maybe they could interpret.
Okay, so it went by Beth Shemesh.
Oops. ESH.
ESH. I think I was right. Jews don't write ISH. That's Irish. Okay. So you shall make likeness of your tumors, likeness of your mind. What's this? Right place.
Down verse 9 and 10.
Okay, so they put the ark of the Lord on the cart, the box of the gold, and the likeness. Likeness. Notice it says likeness. So they didn't really know what it was. And the cows took straightway in the direction of Bathsheba. They went along the highway, lowing as they went. And did not turn aside to the right or to the left, and the Lord of the Philistines followed them to the border of the Shemesh.
The funny picture.
Don't tell me God doesn't have a sense of
humor. Well, that was even supposed to be. Some of the stuff I read said that whole thing with Dagon in the temple was God's sense of humor. Now, the people of the Shemesh were reaping their wheat harvest in the valley, and they raised their eyes and they saw the ark and were glad to see it. The ark came to the field of Joshua, the then shining and stood there where there was a large stone. They split the wood of the cart and offered the cows as a burnt offering to the Lord. The Levites took down the ark of the Lord and the box that was with it, in which were the articles of gold, and put them on a large stone. And the men of Bathsheba offered burnt offerings and sacrifices that day to the Lord. When the five lords of the Philistines saw it, they returned to Ephron that day. These are the golden tumors which the Philistines returned for guilt offerings to the Lord. One for Ashdod, one for Gaza, one for Ashkelon, one for Gath, and one for Ephron. And the golden mice, according to the number of all the cities of the Philistines, brought belonging to the five lords, both fortified cities and the country villages, a large stone on which they set the ark of the Lord as a witness to this day in the field of Joshua, the then Shemite.
And a question.
Yeah.
Why would they be sending the mice and the whatever in gold tone instead of as they were there?
Well, they're sending it to be. What are they doing?
Trying to appease the Israelites.
Which is an offering. It's a picture of an offering. But why the mice?
Yeah.
That they were followed through.
Because there was a plague
They had the
And
then they had a plague of mice at the same time. Well, historians believe that it was bubonic plague, and that there
was infestation
of mice, which the fleas fight the mice, and then general people caused the plague. And they connected the dots between the two.
Yeah, I understand that. What I don't understand is why they're sending these things in.
They're trying to get the boils to stop. So they think that they give God an offering.
And they acknowledge that
a boil.
They acknowledge that this was caused by
identifying they're identifying what the plague was and making something gold that they hear.
Please take this.
The most valuable thing we have here.
Right.
That makes sense.
Right.
And it's kind of like when we go to God and say, I sin because I killed this cat. It's acknowledging.
Well, and they've got the understanding, I think, of maybe the Israelite God wouldn't be too impressed if we just sent some dead mice and cut off some of our tumors and put those with it. He'd be more impressed with, let's make them in the image of gold, rather than these rotting tumors and mice.
Which is acknowledging, where it came from, and it's also an offering. Both of those. Okay, so the Levites took it. Okay, in verse 17, these are the golden tumors which the Philistines returned for a guilt offering to the Lord. One for us. 19. He struck down some of the men of Beth Shemesh because they had looked into the ark of the Lord. He struck down of all the people 50,000, 70 men, and the people mourned because the Lord had struck the people with a great slaughter. Now, before we talk about why, who did God judge in chapter 6?
Israel.
So God judged the Philistines, and now he's judging Beth Shemesh, which is what? Just Israel. The men of Beth Shemesh said, who is able to stand before the Lord, this holy God? Now, why did they come up with that, this holy God? Why is God holy because of what they just saw?
He means what he says.
He means what he says, and...
And there's consequences.
And you knew. The Philistines did not know.
Right.
But you knew. And you didn't do it, and you will pay a price because of that. He told them back in Numbers, I think it's Numbers 4, that this is what would happen if you touched, if you saw, if you looked.
It's kind of like when you discipline your children and they do something wrong, even though everyone around them is doing the same
thing.
Right.
Right. Because they're not your children.
Knew.
And you had told them, right. Not those other people.
God made it very explicit that in carrying the ark, only Aaron and his sons could cover it.
And then
when it was covered up, then the Kohathites could carry it on their shoulders. He gave exact detail how they were to carry the ark.
Yeah.
And that's where David got in trouble later.
Yeah, which we'll run into. So they sent a message to the inhabitants of the current Jerem, saying, the Philistines have brought back the ark of the Lord. Come down and take it with you. Now, why are they wanting to pass it on? 57,000 guys died. Yeah. Why Kiriath? Why them? Why are they the ones?
Because it's the next city up.
There was another priest, evidently, Eleazar, the house of Abinadab.
So there was a priest there.
It doesn't say specifically, but...
Well,
verse 7, it says...
Historically, they don't think Shiloh was there right at the moment. Right. Because it was trashed by the Philistines. He comes back, but...
Thank you.
temple? Why did...
Where is the tabernacle?
Where is the tabernacle right now? Did it get left with Eli and Shiloh? Well, Shiloh was wiped out.
Well, they had... it wouldn't be there anymore. It wouldn't be the... Not what they knew. We don't know. He doesn't tell us. Somebody want to read 2 Chronicles 13, 5 and 6? And somebody else, 1 Chronicles 13, 5 and 6. Somebody else, 2 Chronicles 1, 4. Let's see what those say.
It's in our lesson.
Pardon?
It was, it's not in our lesson, right?
No, it's not in our lesson. When I give you things to look up in class, it isn't. And I generally have no idea why I put it there either. That comes out of a lot of study of history things. So anybody have 1 Chronicles 13, 5 and 6? Did you read it?
So David assembled all Israel together from Shihor of Egypt, even to the entrance of Hamah, to bring the ark of God from Kiriath. And David and all Israel went up to Baal, that is Kiriath, which belonged to Judah, to bring up from there the ark of God. The Lord was enthroned above the cherub, where his name is called.
So, we're not going to see the ark where it belongs until the time of David. 2 Chronicles 1:4 says what? Anybody have that?
However, David had brought up the Ark of God from Kiriath Jearim to the place where he had prepared for it, for he had pitched a tent for it in Jerusalem.
Now, we haven't even met David yet. So, Kiriath Jearim, he's going to stay there. It's going to stay there a long time. And that's where it is. Why would God do that? Why would God do that to Israel? Not have that as a, in a place that it is, like you said, the tabernacle.
Because he was teaching them to
what their tents were, they
carried.
I didn't either. I got 1 I got 2 Chronicles and nothing more.
No, yeah, me too.
Depending on the presence of the ark, not the presence of God.
So they still had stuff to learn. Right. They had stuff to learn in God. They were not ready to receive it yet. And I'm trying to see. You read November 4 and you saw about the Kohenics. So let's go to Samuel 7. We have a 5 minutes.
Okay. What was that 2 Chronicle scripture?
In Kiriath Jearim came, the men came, they took the ark, they brought it to the house
1-4.
Of the and it said there that it remained there for 20 years. It actually remained longer than that. The house of now, what was the response of Israel to the fact that this was not where it belonged? This was not in a place where they could worship. It was not in a temple. What was their response?
They repented.
They lamented. So we're watching them. Their response to the judgment is to lament. What's next?
Turn away from the foreign gods and direct the church.
So they listened to Samuel, and Samuel prophesied, didn't he? Mm-hmm. What was his prophecy?
That if you return to the Lord.
It's a big if.
God will deliver you from the hand of the Philistines.
So if you return to the Lord with all your heart and remove the foreign gods. So, if turn to the Lord,
remove the foreign gods.
Remove. Because what have they been doing with the gods? It's sort of their backup plan. Remove the gods. Serve Yahweh.
Well, and he distinguishes out, remove the foreign gods and the Ashtaroth from among you.
Okay. serve the Lord only, he will then what? He will then deliver you from the hands of the Philistines. So the sons of Israel removed the Baals, the Ashtaroth, and served the Lord alone. Then Samuel said, gather all Israel to Mizpah. You find that little place on your map? And I will pray to the Lord for you. We gathered to Mizpah and drew water and poured it before the Lord and fasted. So what did they do? What was their preparation?
They gathered at Mizpah and fasted.
So they gathered, he prayed, Samuel prayed. They drew water. Ceremonial cleanse. I'll just put cleanse. Cleanse themselves. Poured it out before the Lord. They fasted. What is the purpose of all this? What is the purpose of us ceremonially cleaning? Fasting, we don't discern anything anymore, but fasting, what was the purpose of that? Remembering, getting ready.
Humbling.
Humbling, focusing ourselves. The point of fasting isn't so that you're going to die or starve to death. Nobody in this country, that happened too easily anyway. It is to make valuable what is valuable. And to put the mundane daily stuff away.
Cleansing yourself.
Well, the Jewish people did that because that was part of their whole thing. Think about Jesus when they came into the upper room in chapter 13 of John. What did Jesus do with the other disciples? He washed their feet. Why?
It was dirty.
It was dirty. It goes all the way back to what they learned at the mount when Moses went up the hill. God told them, take off your sandals. This is holy. So it's more of a picture of preparing yourself for what is holy and focusing your heart, mind, eyes, everything on God and laying everything else aside. All the things that grab our attention and take us with it. Anybody anything else to say? I saw some hands. So now, verse 7, when the Philistines heard that the sons of Israel had gathered in Mizpah, the Lord's son Philistines went up against Israel, and when the sons of Israel heard, they were afraid of the Philistines. Why were they afraid?
They always lost. They'd been beaten twice.
Well, and they were though that first time?
And they were down 50,000 men from where they'd been before.
So. Yeah.
The first time, they were pretty dang cocky. I'm sorry. And they went up there, they were going to win. And the Philistines were scared to death of them. And they were the ones afraid because they knew what God had done. So what has Israel not yet still gotten? That it's him they go to. Not all these enchantments and possibilities of things. And by the way, he may have wanted them all to die. They had some. They didn't know because they still don't really trust him. And they still don't really know who he is. What's about with him?
Even though Samuel had told them that God would deliver them from the hands of the Philistines.
Right, exactly.
Samuel has been around all this time.
In fact, his ministry is really just starting, isn't it?
I read somewhere that he wandered about and hid in caves and basically preached.
Yeah. Well, he does that circuit. Did you remember when we talked about the circuit? Mm-hmm. It's a little circle.
Yeah.
It's just a little circle. It starts in Mizpah and kind of ends up back there. I don't know how long it took, but it isn't going to all of Israel.
It took 20 years.
No? it's a little circle. It's how he can do the whole thing in a week.
It says he goes annually on the circuit. Right. It doesn't say how long it takes.
Right. It doesn't. And I'm picturing when I first read that, he goes through all of Israel. No, he doesn't. He goes this little circle. Right. Yeah. Right in the top there. Okay, and we're done. So you can go home and fill in all the blanks. Any last questions or other things you want to add?
Yeah, that would be good.
But the ark isn't going to be put back yet.